Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Money, money, money. Must be funny. On the UK Tech Weekly Podcast, the UK's premier audio store, selling audio bargains every Friday. The UK Tech Weekly Podcast is an infotainment offer from the editors of PC Advisor, Techworld, Macworld UK, and Computerworld UK. You can find us on Acast, on SoundCloud, on iTunes, and more. Every Friday, we head to an audio supermarket, piling high audio bargains and persuading people to part with audio cash to secure audio buy one, get one frees at an audio checkout, in order to bring you no more than 40 minutes of informed tech chat on the hot tech topics of the past 7 days. Don't forget to subscribe, review, and tell your friends. I'm Matt Egan, Editorial Director of IDG UK, and today I am delighted to be joined in conversation by the bringer of life with wit like a knife, Scott Carey, online editor of techworld.com.
Hi.
The speaker of truths and leader of youths, Tamlin McGee, online editor of computerworlduk.com.
Hello.
And the spreader of dread with the lustrous locks of red, David Price, acting editor of Macworld UK.
It's a theme developer.
This week we are talking Black Friday, Facebook, and the fall statement. Be thankful, listener. Black Friday, wow, wow, wow. It's the one with the Midas touch. You're so butch. David Price. Everyone's off down the shops. Why?
Because of the bonkers bargains.
Black Friday.
So I'm trying to get my timings right. We come out on the Friday, don't we? So today...
We come out on Black Friday.
Today, hopefully you're all listening to this rather than going down the shops. But Black Friday is the day after Thanksgiving in the US. Which was yesterday, the 24th, Thursday the 24th of November. And on Black Friday, traditionally, that's the start of the shopping season in America. So all the American stores have started doing amazing sale deals, starting on that day and then proceeding over the weekend. And in the last few years, it has become a huge, huge online sale occasion. And it has spread to Britain.
So that's an interesting point to start off with, really, is when did it become a thing? Because I think we noticed through our consumer websites, I would say in 2013, that actual humans in the UK seem to be interested in Black Friday.
Yeah, it's about that. But I think I would say 3 or 4 years, it's been moderately big in Britain. And it was really last year was the really big one. Last year, it went over £1 billion in the UK for the first time.
Which is like, I mean, that's like $1 billion, right?
that's very droll. And I think more than 3 billion across the extended weekend, because the Monday after Black Friday is called Cyber Monday, which is also going to see some more deals, some special deals that you might want to partake in on Monday.
And this is principally driven in the UK, at least, by Amazon, would that be fair to say?
Amazon are the biggest, but Currys and this year, actually, Apple... are getting into the Black Friday deal, Jamboree.
Which they've done in the past, but not for the past sort of 3-4 years.
In the UK, yeah. They do it in America fairly regularly, but the last time they did a Black Friday sale in this country was in 2013. So they basically haven't been part of it when it's been big in Britain.
So why do the stores do this?
Well, people are... I mean, it's the typical thing of why do people do sales, but it's because people are going to be shopping around this time. There are going to be a lot of people shopping, so they need to compete with each other to get people through their doors or onto their website. But it's sort of the timing of it is perfect. people have just they've just had Thanksgiving. They've they've been stuck in a house with their relatives for a day, and they want to get out of the house and they need to do their Christmas shopping, and it all sort of falls neatly. And it used to happen this time of year anyway, before the internet even. They say that it became called Black Friday, possibly because it might be partly because that's when the stores go into the black. That's when they start making profit for the year. But it could even be because of the streets being black with traffic, cars, because everyone's out shopping.
I call bullshit on that particular thing.
Yeah, well, it's a folk analogy.
It sounds ominous, like a massacre or something to me.
But isn't that, kind of,
all the other black name of days are bad, aren't they? Black
and those are the videos we used to get on Mail Online, wasn't it, of people like fighting each other in Asda over a TV.
Yeah, it does get pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. One of our colleagues sent me a website called Black Friday Death Count. But the funny thing about this, I mean, not very funny, but the odd thing about this is I was thinking it would be loads. And actually, there have been 7 recorded deaths in Black Friday.
I mean, that's enough.
That's too many, though, isn't it?
Well, like you say it's enough, but... I read this article about people dying while they're playing video games, and there are, you know, obviously some, and they get very publicised. And then somebody else said, well, how many people have died while playing chess? How many people have died while reading a book?
Yeah, and,
any activity that lots of human beings do, loads of people have died during.
And somebody dies and somebody's born at Glastonbury every year, because if you get that number of people together, that's what happens.
Black Friday is a thing that millions of people partake in every year, and 7 of them have died. And it's like, I can't really get worried by that. Seems to me like a normal number.
I think it's a non-story, isn't it?
So to get back to the story, how do people feel about this? Because, I mean, I'll put my cards on the table. We, as a publisher, make a lot of money out of Black Friday, so it's a big, important part of our consumer business. But it feels so distasteful. And it exists, in my view, as a means of driving people to buy stuff they don't need. But how does everybody else feel about this festival of consumerism?
I don't really partake. But I normally buy flights on Black Friday. I've done that a few times where I'll get in on the Ryanair deals and book myself sort of a trip early next year for pennies. So I don't mind doing that. But the idea of actually going to Asda to buy a big screen TV on Black Friday fills me with so much existential dread.
Asda aren't doing it. Well, they didn't do it last year because of
the crazy bad PR stuff.
It doesn't really work as an in-store thing, if you ask me.
No, and this was interesting because I was at a talk yesterday with the head of data at Retail Week, and he was saying that like when Black Friday became a thing here, all the retailers sort of saw what was happening and responded by investing millions and millions into their stores to try and make them like Black Friday ready. And then 1 year later, it went online.
Totally. Yeah.
So they like completely misinvested their money. They should have invested it on online sort of robustness. And that's why you see all of these sites going down on Black Friday, because they can't deal with the demand.
But in the US, excuse me, in the US there's a pretty physical presence on Black Friday though, isn't there?
Yeah.
So why do we think it's not transferred over to the UK?
I think that's, for me, because it's a new thing though. And it's a new thing that's really occurred to people in the UK post-internet shopping becoming the thing.
It's associated in people's heads in this country as that's the day when you get the great deals online. Mm. Whereas in America, there's this cultural legacy of that's the day after Thanksgiving, you've had your turkey, you get out of the house.
A little bit like the Boxing Day sales in the UK.
I'm interested to hear your sort of take on this, though, Tamlin, this absolute festival of obscene capitalist consumption. anyone who doesn't know, Tamlin is a card-carrying member of the extreme left-wing.
Sharing his thoughts on the Tech Weekly podcast. What's going on in the Labour Party and so on. I think that there's a tendency to knock people for shopping, and I think it's kind of gross because for a lot of people, especially in the States, this is like one of the days of the year where extremely expensive items that are available to more wealthy people are now available to them. So, you know, you see a lot of posts on Twitter like, oh my God, all this violence and Black Friday or whatever. And like, I think that's more of a gross spectacle than people buying stuff, because it's like, these are people who potentially wouldn't usually be able to afford it at all.
Yeah. Fair point. So for those people, David, do you have any tips as to how to grab a bargain this Black Friday?
Well, sharp elbows.
The most important thing, obviously, is to come to PC Advisor and Macworld.
PC Advisor and Macworld UK.
Get the best deals. yeah, you have to be careful because, you know, I just said it's an obscene celebration of consumer capitalism. It is. It is kind of designed to induce an irrational response. That's what companies aren't calculating on. So you just need to think, is this something that I'm going to buy? Is this something I was going to buy anyway?
Yeah.
And if it was, if it's something you need, like I personally desperately need a large television, then now is a great time to get a good deal on it. But what you can't do is start just browsing and thinking, well, you know, that would be quite nice, yeah, I suppose. And then you get pulled in.
I nearly did it myself because I'm going to get my niece, on behalf of her parents, the Kindle Fire HD tablet. And the Kindle Fire tablet is massively... it's like 20 quid. And I was like, oh, I could get two of those, but that wouldn't be as good as getting her one of the things she actually wants.
Yeah, no, exactly.
And it's just interesting how that psychology works, isn't it?
Yeah. Because you have to be aware of that aspect of it. Be aware that some people are a bit sneaky about the marked reduction. So it's not unknown for people to put up prices early in November so that they can then say 50% off and it's actually not anywhere near that good a deal. The deals will continue. Many of them have been going on since early to mid-November.
Yeah, well, Amazon's in particular, because they don't have the logistics to deliver the volume of more than the volume of sales they made last year on Black Friday. So they've actually spread the sale over November. I mean, that's their kind of official story. I'm sure it's also because they think it will drive more sales, but their Black Friday sale started at the beginning of November. And honestly, I'd be surprised if it finishes before January.
Yeah, absolutely. And the last thing to remember is check, you know, look for reviews or whatever of the product, because a lot of companies try and get rid of older stock. Check it's the latest version, check it's a good product, rather than something they're just trying to get rid of. Yeah. But there are some really good deals out there, so I don't want to just pour.
Yeah, no, completely. And I suppose the other thing, without being totally craven in promoting our own sites, there are other sites out there doing the same thing, but it is worth looking for. You know, we're talking about technology, there are other areas, but there will be editorial sites where people are, as we are, curating good deals rather than just turning on a fire hose of all the deals that are out there. It is worth doing that little bit of research to see where the
good buyers are. Yeah, you don't want to be rushed, that's the thing, because part of the psychology that we're talking about is that you will feel like, I have to do it now or I'll miss the deal.
Yeah.
It's better to miss the deal than to get a bad deal because you didn't put the time in to check, you know, the small print and so on.
Wise words, David Price. Let's go around the room. Bye, 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 or why, David Price.
Oh, that's tough.
I'll give you the opportunity to go bye, why, bye, or something like that if you want.
No, it's too difficult. I'll say bye, bye, bye.
Okay. Tell me, what are your thoughts?
Why, bye. I think I will get a TV. So.
Scotch Carey.
Why.
Why. We'll take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Facebook. Don't push too hard, your dreams are China in your hand. Join in. Don't wish too hard because they may come true and you can handle... Just me. Scotch Carey, why is Facebook spreading bull in a China shop?
Oh, I see. So... there's a lot to unpack with Facebook at the moment because it post-election, there's been a lot of hand-wringing amongst the media and Facebook itself in sort of the role it played in disseminating sort of fake news across audiences. And they've been trying to respond to that. But what now has come out is that in their attempts to re-enter the Chinese market, they've been building an internal tool which will censor or suppress news stories that aren't palatable to the Chinese government. This has caused some strife internally, apparently, where there are rumours that some leading members of staff have threatened to quit or have quit the company because it basically defeats the basic purpose of what Facebook is, which is meant to be an open place.
Well, that was the point I really wanted to get into.
Go
because
on.
I think a lot of this, I agree with you. I think, like, when I first heard this story that in order to break into China, Facebook was developing tech that would make content which is created by its users, mm-hmm. in principle, palatable to the Chinese government, it made me feel awful. I thought that's a terrible thing. But then I think it depends on what you think Facebook is.
Mm.
If Facebook's a media company, all media companies, including our own, you know, that publish in China, change the material when they're published in China, and they do so because they want to be in favour of the Chinese government, which is, restricts access to the market, and they want to make money because China's a huge market.
Yeah.
And this is that emotional, what is Facebook a thing we make as social media users, or is it a media company?
Yeah, I think this is definitely the problem that Facebook is facing at the moment, and it's probably why it's been in the news so much, is because there seems to be an identity crisis going on, and you can see that by the split internally that seems to be happening. Zuckerberg very clearly sees it more like you do, as a media company that relies on ads to make money, and that entering the Chinese market is the proper play to make as a business. But there seems to be other people within the company that are holding on to their original goal or aim, or, you know, highfalutin Silicon Valley rhetoric that they are, you know, an open place to share ideas and to censor that would be really unpalatable.
I think there's a moral and ethical question here anyway, because of that, because the way it sets up to the user is that kind of open platform.
Yeah.
Can it work technically? I mean, do we know exactly what this software, because it's quite a thin news story.
It is quite a thin news story. I mean, by the sounds of it, it's going to be some form of algorithm that the sort that underpins their entire news feed that will just suppress certain words or phrases from people's news feeds in a geography. I don't think it would be an overly difficult thing for Facebook to develop that.
Well, I guess they're doing it to an extent anyway at the minute, in order to amplify certain messages, in order to deliver more ads.
Yeah, and also, you know, and they're also talking, well, Zuckerberg's been talking about this sort of vague news strategy to get fake news off the site, and that's sort of a similar problem in its own way, in the way that they need to develop technology that can detect and suppress news stories that aren't based on fact.
That guy's so conflicted, because...
Yes.
Because on the one hand, he's very skillfully... either surrounded himself with people who helped him do this, or done it himself, built up this huge, commercially successful social media product, which so few people have managed to do. Doesn't pay any tax, but wants to be seen as a philanthropist.
Yeah.
You know, is ruthless about, you know, moving people out and putting algorithms in place if it helps them to drive a more successful business, but wants to be seen to somehow be a force for good in the world.
I think what's interesting about this story is, as soon as you throw China into the mix, there's a tendency for a lot of media companies in the West to get completely hysterical about it. Like, China's this, you know, it's a really easy boogeyman to have, and it's this, you know, scary, towering thing. But Facebook itself has been running, like, all these bizarre experiments on its users anyway, like trying to determine their moods by showing them certain things in their feeds and then measuring their response to that, and, you know, really questionable ethically experiments. So, you know, Facebook wields a lot of power, and it's not particularly surprising that it's considering this, I think.
Yeah, completely.
There's a conflict though as well between particular people that would say it's terrible that they're censoring news in China, but those same people, I think, in many cases would say, but they should crack down on fake news.
Yeah.
Which is actually a very similar thing. It just depends on your viewpoint.
Yeah, exactly.
The Chinese authorities presumably would say that these are, you know, insurrectionary views, these are inaccurate views, whatever. And we would say the same things about these, you know, inaccurate articles about Denzel Washington endorsing Donald Trump. But in the same, you know, in both cases, what you're doing is you're taking a messy, user-created and often inaccurate feed of content, and you're choosing to curate it in some algorithmic way.
Yeah.
And it's the same solution, but, you know, opposite sides of the political spectrum.
You can go the other way as well. I mean, Google's got immense power as a media company, and what you see with Google News is a kind of feedback loop of certain stories that Google decides algorithmically you want to see.
Yeah.
And that's quite a... It's not, you know, outright censorship, but in a way it kind of is, because you're limited to what you
Yeah,
you
the internet, the early internet, the idea was that because you could access everything from everywhere, it would make people's tastes more Catholic, small c. And in fact, it's done quite the opposite, because what people do is, and it's, you know, we've seen it with book purchases or music purchases, you like this, so you probably like this. People, in fact, all of us included, follow the echo chamber route, if you like, that we tend to read, consume more things that subscribe to our worldview than the opposite, because we're not.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Not in the old days, you'd read a newspaper, and even if it was a newspaper which supported your political views, it would be a curated book of stuff, which might include stuff you wouldn't otherwise read. Speaking of messy and user-generated, the British government has done something recently, or has at least suggested that it might do something, around what they're describing as conventional sex acts in pornography.
Well, I thought we weren't going to go there.
Yeah, I think we should, because I think it relates, actually, to what Scott was saying, or what you were saying, David, sorry, about, you know, one person's fake news is another person's news.
I'm probably going to end up being quite woolly on the details, but they've said that they're going to crack down on non-conventional pornography, that it's going to become illegal to view those things. And, of course, the important thing there is who's... convention it is, whose definition.
Well, is it humans or animals?
You can look that up online as well. They've got a list, yeah.
Oh, have they? Sure,
yeah, and it's also, I think the idea is if it couldn't be rated by the BBFC, the British Film Classification Board, then it's illegal.
The legality of that's interesting, but the BBFC actually does take a fairly mature approach. I mean, basically, as long as no one gets hurt, they will classify it. And it used to be the censor, and now actually it's an odd role to play as a film classification agency, but I'm fairly pro them because they seem to be fairly sensible about these things. Whether that means you should use that to apply legality or illegality to online content.
It's probably unenforceable anyway.
Yeah, well, of course it is, yeah. As everything that every Western government suggests about the internet is, it's completely unenforceable. But it plays well to the people who don't understand and the reactionaries to say, you know, if you're struggling as a government... it always plays well to say, let's ban something bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously what's been done in this case is that they've taken something which is unpopular, which is any non-conventional sexual activity, and using it as a standard bearer for censorship.
Yeah. It's not even that it's unpopular, it's just that it has to be seen to be unpopular.
Yeah.
You know,
it's something that it's difficult for people to get behind.
Yeah. But surely in practical terms, it would be like trying to ban football streams. It's just basically impossible because as soon as you shut one down, another one pops up.
Right, let's move back to Facebook briefly then. So do we feel that our response to Facebook is because Facebook sets itself up as one thing, and the fact that it is a ruthlessly commercial business feels somehow dishonest? Or do we feel that this kind of censorship in going into China is de facto wrong?
It feels de facto wrong.
Yeah,
I don't know if I could really justify that. But the suppression of the media in China is so sort of... And I'm conscious of trying not to turn them into a boogeyman, as you said, Tamlin. But
sorry, bogeyman, right?
I thought it was bogeyman. When did boogeyman?
Boogeyman is someone who dances.
I like boogeyman.
You don't have to worry about the boogeyman, he's cool.
Yeah. Blame it on the boogeyman.
But he gets into some fairly unconventional sex.
You know, the unconventional sex acts included female ejaculation. And
what?
And I think included menstruation. They couldn't really make it any clearer that what they don't want people to be looking at is anything that is feminist or female empowering, or, you know, in any way not what is absolutely standard nuts reader pornography. Anyway,
missionary in the dark, kind of.
Yeah, with yeah.
Really, really enjoying walking through this minefield with you, David.
It's been fun. Not trying to keep it broadcast. What were we talking about before we talked about pornography?
Facebook.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's such a fundamental right to deny people. The free expression of political opinion and the ability to find out what is going on in the world. It's so fundamentally against, you know, prevents people ever forming any kind of coherent opposition to the government, because they aren't able to find out what the government is doing, and they aren't able to find out that what the government is telling them is wrong.
Isn't that a phenomenon? You know, which dictionary was it? One of the dictionaries just named their word or phrase of the year as post-truth politics.
Post-truth, yeah.
Which I'm
Oxford. Colin said Brexit, I think.
Right.
Two lovely words.
I'm not sure how much I get behind the theory of post-truth politics, but it's certainly a more sophisticated means of suppressing information.
Yeah.
The idea that you just, you know, flood sites like Facebook probably with so much garbage that you can't really determine what is true and what isn't.
Yeah. And undermine the authority of existing media outlets.
Yeah.
I think to try and put a bow on it, like Facebook's realizing quite quickly that it can't be all things to all people, especially when it comes across geographies where you've got difficulties like this. You know, it is a social network. It's, you know, billions of users, and people are messy and complicated, and things are difficult to sort of get right for everyone. So they're realizing very quickly that they have to try and adapt as they go along, and it's not going particularly well for them. But, you know, Zuckerberg's going to still try and get into China, because
I don't see why he couldn't just say, we're not going to go into China until you allow us to be uncensored. I don't see, because he wants to be a philanthropist and he's got a lot of money, and what's stopping him from just saying, and this is probably spectacularly not naive, but, you know, I imagine if I was, is he the richest shareholders man in the world?
Oh yeah, I imagine it's board pressure.
Yeah,
I guess
they've got to keep expanding because they're a capitalist company with shareholders.
Yeah, and one of their board members is Peter Thiel, so, you know,
and he wants to be seen
like
as to be a
no, not a big fan
philanthropist, but he doesn't pay tax, so.
I think he should probably do that as well.
Knackers to him.
Do you remember when...
It's not very well choosing what you put money into. How about subscribing to the society from which you make money?
That is interesting that he's willing to... Or Facebook as a company is willing to compromise and accommodate the Chinese government in censorship, but also is going through all these machinations to avoid paying their tax everywhere.
It is interesting. Let's ask the question. Let's put a bow on it and get behind this.
We'll sing from the same hint.
Messy and complicated humans that we are. Let's go around the room. Face crooks or making face megabooks? David Price.
Face crooks feels like a libelous thing to say.
Yeah, it'll be all right. No one listens.
Face crooks. Face crooks.
Tamlin McGee.
Face crooks.
Scott Carey.
Face crooks, because I can't remember the other one.
Making face megabooks.
Oh yeah, they are making.
Which
face
does sound
megabooks.
Like unconventional porn. We'll take a very short break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about the autumn statements. All the leaves are brown. All the leaves are brown, and the sky is grey. And the sky is grey. I went for a walk.
I went for a walk.
Don't know the rest of it. Oh. Which means it must be autumn statement time, or awesome statements time. Tamlin McGee, what is it and what's in it for tech?
So, every year in autumn, surprise, surprise, there is a statement from the Chancellor of the Exchequer, who happens to be Philip Hammond, who took over recently from George Osborne under Theresa May's cabinet of the Conservative government, where they kind of outline their fiscal policy in various areas like tax rates, housing, and so on. What's been interesting about the financial statements over the past couple of years is that the Conservative government is really, really keen to appear to be very progressive on technology. And that didn't change here. But in my opinion, and some of the reactions that I've seen and the people I've talked to, it's a little bit, Philip Hammond's kind of beating his chest about how progressive they are on technology, but in practice, it's probably not.
That's kind of, I mean, without wishing to go too much into the broad politics of it, that's kind of where they are at the minute, though, isn't it? They're a weird government because they haven't been elected, really.
Mm-hmm.
But post-Brexit, they were kind of the only option. And so they desperately want to appear for presentational reasons to be progressive, mm-hmm. but actually they're not very progressive at all. And so, yeah, so, and tech is one of those things where I think politicians think, yeah, if we look like we're positive about mm-hmm. new stuff, the Jeremy Corbyn had a statement out about the fourth industrial revolution.
Oh, God, that's amazing.
Statement
was
2 years
horror.
Later, he's got that term. So they're all trying to sort of append themselves to sexy new stuff.
Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of, it makes sense. It's an easy one to impress people who don't really know about
exactly.
tech or don't
yeah.
write about it.
So there were some things in it. So there was the UK is going to create a startup incubator.
That's right. There will be £400 million put into that to help grow startups. The
will
state
it be like the incubator in Silicon Valley.
A little bit like that.
Do we need another incubator?
No, I don't think we do.
We don't need another.
I mean, the way Philip Hammond presented it was kind of this appeal to Britishness and growing companies on British soil. But you know, it's kind of a
don't knock it, Tamlin, because as discussed yesterday, we could easily take the UK Tech Weekly podcast to the British government incubator and get some nice fat salaries for all.
Well, let's hope so. As well as that, he committed to a bunch of 5G coverage, which is 4G but one faster.
Well, there isn't even a standard for 5G, is there?
No, there isn't. It's not realistic to deliver in the slightest until 2020, at the very minimum, according to some telco analysts that I've seen comment on it.
So it's unambitious. He should have gone for 6G.
Yeah, 3000G, whatever. Well, one strange thing he announced was something called the National Productivity Investment Fund. And no one really knows what that means, but it does sound quite sinister. Like, anyone who's been paying attention in politics, or even just, you know, their daily life of work, can kind of see the parallels between productivity and precarity. It tends to be squeezing more work out of you.
Yeah. Sounds like a workhouse.
Time. Yes, it does. And considering their track record, I don't know what it's going to mean. It's been presented as a way to foment a high-skill, high-wage and high-living standard economy. But again, that's kind of at odds with the country's immigration strategy at the moment, which is, you know, limiting the entry of foreign students into universities here and, you know, being horribly racist in general.
Why are we laughing at that?
Yeah, why are we laughing at that?
The only thing about productivity is that I've been to enough conferences over the last year to see this slide that keeps getting put up, where basically UK productivity is flatlined since the financial crash. So I think they're just any attempt to try and ease that concern in industry. And as you say, it's a completely vague policy, but they're just trying to be shown to be
I think what's really interesting about that, Scott, is that in this country, despite, you know, the statements and being positive about tech being progressive and so on, and you might have just knocked the idea of the fourth industrial revolution just now in the intro, but countries like Germany that do have good industrial strategy and productivity are taking it very, very seriously.
I wasn't knocking it, just to be clear. I was knocking the fact that
the statement was horrible. I haven't read
that. It's
well, it was, it, and it just felt, it felt like the Jeremy Corbyn didn't get it.
There's no way he wrote that statement.
It was a phrase he'd heard. I think we've talked about this before, but I think that we are in a time of serious industrial revolution, and embracing it for the good of the majority of mm-hmm. citizens or subjects in our case. It is critical for government, but there isn't a government. Maybe the German government is, but I haven't seen.
There's some signs that, you know, it's starting to be talked about. There was a science committee report the other week about AI and the role that can can play. But I think that pretty much most governments are failing to see just how, God, I hate the word disruptive, but genuinely disruptive that technologies like AI and the Internet of Things and automation are going to be. And so just saying, you know, 5G and Wi-Fi is all well and good.
Because governments are actually becoming redundant in some ways. I mean, we talked about Zuckerberg and Facebook previously, mm-hmm. and I detest this idea of I'm going to be a philanthropist and I'm going to step out of the tax system. But a lot of them, these super wealthy people, will do that. And they're kind of power sources that are separate to government. And if you think about Philip Hammond in the Treasury, he actually doesn't need to send an email. He probably will choose not to send an email because he doesn't want mm-hmm. a record of what he's done. He's got Treasury civil service officials working for him. Civil service is not a progressive, tech-savvy organization. Look at how GDS has been smashed around so many times over the years. So it's not surprising that career politicians haven't got a clue what's happening in terms of tech and industry and how that impacts on people's real lives, from skilled workers, right? You know, skilled workers who are becoming redundant, literally, right down to people who just want to have a job and see industry change really fast and leave them behind.
I think there were two things from the statement that have kind of gone under the radar. I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but he seemed to allude to a different way of paying tax if you're self-employed, and that could have an effect on both IT contractors and also gig economy workers who are
Uber drivers,
delivery drivers, all these like service jobs that are, you know, it's piecework. One other thing he said that I thought was quite interesting was that he name-checked SoftBank, which is the Japanese conglomerate that bought ARM, the British chip design company. You know, all of our phones probably have an ARM design chip in them. And he said that was like a British success story, but that seemed to be quite at odds with the message of, you know, keeping British IP within the country. It's like ARM is...
It was a British success story.
It was an incredible success story.
It was heavily dominated by the US office anyway for the final few years. Bought by SoftBank.
There's been some bizarre sort of cheerleading of that deal going on from government ever since sort of Hammond came into the role. And today, actually, there was news that the Scottish tech company Skyscanner sold to China for $1.4 billion, so they actually were a unicorn. They had a unicorn exit because they were valued at over $1 billion.
Speaking of non-conventional porn,
but they're
unicorn exit is my porn name.
Brilliant, well done. But yeah, that's another example of a British tech success story being bought overseas, probably at like a discounted rate post Brexit.
I don't personally really subscribe to this whole, you know, British company success story things, but it does seem at odds with what he was trying to say. He did mention tax a little bit as well, and he said that you know, there's a perception amongst the public that everything's in favor of large multinational corporations, and that perception is probably correct. He said that the government will make sure that any company which makes a substantial profit in the UK will pay its share of the tax. But I thought it was interesting wording.
Yeah, of course. Because, again, Facebook, not to pick on Facebook, but apparently makes a big loss in the UK.
Yeah.
Clearly it doesn't, you know, but that's how its money is moved. Vodafone, Google.
Yeah, it sounds like they're still going to find a way to wriggle out of that and just siphon it into Dublin or whatever avoid it.
He did address that briefly, but, you know, how much faith do you have in a new Conservative government?
I know. It'll be really interesting to see if they actually try and clamp down on this. And on the campaign trail, Donald Trump said he's going to clamp down on the likes of Amazon not paying tax. So it'll be interesting to see how both those...
Famous non-taxpayer Donald Trump.
Exactly. Exactly. And him and Bezos have a long-running feud for some reason. So it'll be interesting to see if he actually comes through with that. It'd be interesting to see if he comes through with anything he said.
Yeah, he said a lot of things on the campaign trail. I'm not sure he's going
to. Just quickly, one last thing from the statement that I missed. There was £2 billion pledged for R&D investment for new technologies by 2021. And that sounds like an impressive figure, but you have to think in, you know, after the Brexit vote, how's that going to compare to academics and research organisations that were able previously just to... Not simply, but
to get
EU grants. Yeah, it's going to... I feel the 2 billion mark is going to pale in significance compared to what would have been available previously.
And it might not be new money either for that reason.
So let's go around the room then. The autumn statement, season of mists and mellow fruitfulness, or greasy and pissed with yellow spitefulness. David Price.
Season of mists and mellow fruitfulness. Huh. I don't know if that... I mean, I don't really understand politics.
It just sounds nice, though.
It's just a nice thing to say.
Tammy McGee.
I will take the opportunity to say greasy piss on the podcast.
Scott Carey.
Seasons of mist and mellow fruitfulness.
Thank you all, and thank you for listening to this edition of the UK Tech Weekly podcast. Do get in touch to let us know your thoughts and opinions and to shake us down for cash. You can tweet us at UK Tech Podcast or email editor@idg.co.uk. We will be back next week with more informed and uninformed opinion on the hottest topics in tech. Until then, do find us on Acast, iTunes, SoundCloud, and all of those other places. And give us a nice review. Give us some stars. Tell people that we're great. Maybe grab one of your friends' phones, download our podcast, force them to subscribe. Until then, team, say goodbye.
Cheers, guys.
Goodbye.
Bye.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.